Connect with others in the Awaken Therapist community and join us over on Patreon. When you become a member of the Awaken Therapist community, you'll gain access to exclusive teachings, consultations, and resources. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. I'm Harmony Quaker, licensed counselor, author, and visiting instructor at Naropa University, where I teach Gestalt therapy. I created this podcast to support therapists and clients in unlocking the magic of psychotherapy. In season two, I'm joined by expert therapists who bring a wealth of insight into the conversation of transpersonal counseling. In this episode of the Awaken Therapist podcast, I'm joined by Tamara Sattler, licensed therapist, teacher, and author. We talk about the fundamental nature of spirituality in our clinical work. And Tamara teaches us about the clinical application of the Enneagram. I hope you enjoy this episode. What you were just saying just really lit me up over here, this piece around the essence of transpersonal being so elusive and yet so fundamental. And I'm wondering, how did you arrive to transpersonal counseling?
So I guess the short answer is when the formula didn't work. So the achieving, striving, success formula, probably given to me directly by my mother, didn't work. And then she passed away. And so the formula holder, I didn't have any longer. And so I had to do the full turnaround. So instead of external, I had to go internal and do the full inner landscape journey. So I think that was the moment where it just wasn't working anymore. And so then I started at about, I'd say about 35, it seems pretty appropriate astrologically. I started the inner journey. And then I found that it was called transpersonal and all these other things, awakening and presence.
Yeah, I know the word transpersonal isn't used very frequently in the larger scope of clinical psychology in the world in general. And yet it really does get to this beautiful piece of looking within as opposed to looking without and coming back home to the essence of the deeper truth of our own humanity. It sounds like some liberation sort of happened for you when your mom passed away, where you had a different permission for how to be in the world.
Yes, including being a cocktail waitress down the street from my house at the time. So, yeah, full permission for a lot of stuff that just kind of wasn't allowed in my upbringing or my conditioning. And it wasn't easy. It took many, many years. It's still unfolding.
And this piece about striving feels so relevant to me because I think the old paradigm of counseling and psychotherapy really positions the counselor as the expert who has achieved all of this information that we're going to bestow on our clients. And that is not the essence of transpersonal counseling. Like, we're really listening to our clients' innate spirituality as the guide for their healing. And I'd love to hear your take on that.
Yeah, so I teach at Naropa also, and then running supervision groups, I constantly hear, especially from new therapists, totally makes sense. What are some tools? What should I do? And perfect. And sort of what's happening right now? Where are you coming from in this? What about just being? What comes up for you in just being? Is it okay to just be with someone? Is it okay to just have, we were talking in class yesterday, is it okay to just to have spiritual small talk? I thought that was so sweet. Is that okay? So all of these elements, but I think as, you know, new therapists, of course we want some tools in our toolbox. And then in my where I am right now, and I was talking to my own therapist about this, the tools seem, I don't want to say silly at this point, but the tool is us or is in The relationship is in the being together.
I think that's brilliant. And I do think this does come with time and a lot of practice. I think we've been practicing for about the same amount of time, but really trusting the present moment and trusting the inherent intelligence of the container as opposed to our conceptual knowing. When we're engaging from our conceptual knowing, there's this sort of, in Gestalt, we would call it the I-it, where we're objectifying our client and seeing them as somebody to fix. But really, in transpersonal counseling, we're seeing our client's wholeness and we're meeting them in this really authentic interaction that has this sort of spiritual dynamic that can be quite mystical and hard to put words to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think taking those risks in just whatever way they come, like I have an example of a client I just worked with. He has a real sad face, and this also pertains to what was coming up in class yesterday. And normally a therapist may not, point to the sad face. And he's a tech founder, really just a thriving man. And I said, I need to talk about the sad face. What happens right here and now? And it just like unleashed this whole thing, and we're still talking about it. But something like that, the risk, or the student brought up a giggle. What about just kindly touching the giggle, not judging the giggle? If I'm a therapist and a professional one at that, I may not take that opportunity to play or to wonder or to get curious. And that I have the chills right now. And that's what I love, just in the moment, just something, just speaking to the little, is that the little boy, that little sad face?
Yeah, the present moment expression as like the entry point. And I see this in my students as well, this like fear that clients are going to feel judged by being noticed. And really, this is the essence of attunement. Like the being the clear witness, seeing our clients accurately, bringing our pure seeing to the container. It's one of the main reasons I think clients come to us because they can't see themselves with that level of clarity. They're sort of swimming in it, and they really do need our reflection in that way. And I love the way you said in the most non-judgmental, loving way, I see you and I'm curious about what's happening for you right now. And really just trusting that opening has some intelligence and some gift for the client.
Yeah, and like I learned in Hakomi, I'm Hakomi, not certified, but practice trained. But you can be wrong. So if I would have said something like, and he's not ready for that, that's okay. Okay, so we'll just continue on. Yeah, so is that a tool? Sure. But is it coming from a place of my own authenticity? My own transparent, like, I'm really curious, what is this little sad face of this successful, amazing man?
Yes, and it's not even about being wrong. It's more about creating an opening to see what's right here. So if the client's like, I'm actually not feeling sad, oh, well, then what is here for you? Like, it's just another opening. It's another moment to be with. And I do think that clients and also therapists feel a sense of repair in those moments because how many relationships have that capacity to take a guess and be wrong and stay curious and stay in contact. It's such a beautiful offering.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know you and I, aside from teaching at Naropa, we also share something else in common, and that is having written a book that can be such a beautiful resource and also very vulnerable to have written. And I'm wondering if you're willing to share more about your process of writing and your book itself.
No, Harmony, how come no one told me that there would be so many feelings in the finished product through my coaches and editors and publisher? Maybe someone did tell me, I didn't take it in. So my book was part narrative, part clinical, and then part kind of tutorial. And I don't know how, but my clients got a hold of it pretty quickly, some of my key clients, and that was shocking. So the process, I think just taking your time with it all. Would I have changed maybe to first come out with maybe just more a clinical theoretical potentially? But now I've worked through some of the feelings of my clients could get a hold of my book. They like to search their therapists online. So I think just as a writer, as a therapist, as a human, to just consider and sit in all of it. I also considered pulling my book, and that's kind of impossible at this point with, all of the various avenues and where it spreads. But I think for me, I think the lesson more is in sitting with myself, taking my full seat as a therapist, warts and all, my full journey. But also as therapists, we have to consider, the ethics of disclosure and all of that. So, it was a beautiful process. I think in my, if I have a next book, I'm going to have more consideration. And I think as the burgeoning writers out there, talk to your coaches, sit with things, do the full from inception to once it's out there for a while. How does that feel? So, I guess that's what I have to say.
And your book is called Too Much, Not Enough. Is that right? Yeah. I think that people learn through story. And so I think it's such a gift to, share your process. And I also believe that by seeing somebody who's overcome and who has integrated and done the work and like has this like deep perspective, you offer more dimension to the process, to readers. And I find it to be so inspirational. And I'll say, I think about pulling my book all the time. My first book, I self-published it because I wanted that choice. I wanted to be able to take it back whenever I could. Hearing somebody's read it, I feel like sort of naked, like, oh, wow, I did that. And I wonder if this feels true for you too. For me, while I've pondered all of that and thought about it, there seems to be something greater that wanted to come through me that my ego didn't want. Like, if it was up to my ego, the book wouldn't be out there. But for some reason, my spirit and my soul was like, share your shadow, show your pain, like, let people know that you're a human. And, for me, this was also part of the undoing of the expert narrative that I had been holding. It was really humbling.
Ooh. Oh, it's yeah, I had no idea that you felt that way about your first book, which I have read. I haven't read the third book. It's the third book, right? The new book, which I want to. In pondering it all, it's like if I can be with my shadow and my sort of parts that feel a little cringy, then maybe my clients and maybe the person, on the other end of the planet might be able to accept a little bit more of their parts that they haven't fully owned. One of my longest term clients got a hold of it quick, never told anyone I was writing a book. And this client I've worked with for 9 years, and she said, I don't know the exact words, but something like, now I have permission to be myself. And I thought, wow. So owning more of me, the journey of self. So I think that when I say, I don't know if I had a full choice then, and I think my choice now may still be to, have the vulnerability, have the all the stuff, all the grit.
And I believe also in your book, you're, pulling from your expert knowledge in the Enneagram. And so the book in particular is focusing on the Enneagram 4, but I just would love to hear about how you use the Enneagram and how it informs your sense of self and your work with clients.
In the beginning of my practice, I didn't set out to just see sexual four Enneagrams. So, sexual 1 to 1 is a subtype that goes across all of the types. kind of an evolutionary way of how we move. So I didn't set out to see just type four, which is sort of called the drama queen, the too much and not enough is a perfect title, the romantic, all of these ways, glass half empty. And I had mostly fours in my practice. So I think that my own, sitting with my inner patterns, my inner filters, and then having, then being, a therapist to all these clients, it has just gotten worked over and over. And before this call, I was thinking of a sexual four that I'm seeing later today. And I really have to be careful to not finish her sentence and to not say, "Oh my gosh, you too." I mean, it is so palatable. It's just like, oh, you see the world this way too, in that exact way. Great for attunement. Not so great with, hopping on a complete parallel experience. It's been the most influential path to me. And then I can't really say enough about it, that in my meditations, I can put attention a little bit more on the help of what's here now for me as a four. How is my glass overflowing instead of half empty all the time? How am I thinking my feelings? So over and over and over again. And then the clients know, not only do they just have a feel of, oh, I've really been there. I've really walked this walk. And then for couples, I can't imagine not having the Enneagram because quickly you can see the dynamic. And I have not met a couple in my practice that has the same type. So always two different types. That will be interesting someday. And then the dynamic that forms from the two different ways that we see reality. So basically, the Enneagram is an awakening tool, a map.
I really appreciate the way you shared how you use it in your own personal awareness. I have a similar practice. And when you said again and again and again, I was like, yes, I think this is so important for people to know that our personality structure is pretty much predictable. And that's what said, I just got the chills when I said that. That's what's so one of my favorite things about the Enneagram is like, yes, we have different levels of health within our type, and we have our stress patterns and our heal patterns. But when we understand our map, like the way we relate to ourselves in the world, we can see that it's actually quite predictable, our meaning making and our filter and our projections. And that is so beautiful for our own self-awareness. Oh, there that is again. The way that I, I'm an Enneatype 2. The way I feel, I just want to help everybody. I want to feel so proud that I gave them what they wanted, and just tend to my sweet little ego that thinks that that's important without believing its truth.
Definitely. Yes. And I still hope there's more theorists or clinicians that bring in more skills and more ways to work with it, not just tools, but ways to work with this amazing map instead of just talking about it. How do we use it?
I'll add there and wonder if you see this too, that there's an energetic expression of each type. So even if you don't have never spoken to somebody and you just kind of watch them walk around the room, you can see like, oh, there's that seven sort of like leaving themselves in this way. And there's that five sort of recoiled in the corner and like protecting their energy. I'm wondering if you see that too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think, I don't know who writes on sort of the energetic qualities, but as we know, Almas, writes on the sort of the deeper qualities, sort of the more essence qualities, and they kind of sometimes have a color to them. But yeah, I don't have in my mind anyone who writes about the expression, but absolutely. And then, you look at sort of developmental scale done by Russ and Don, which I still love. It can be, Google search, just developmental scale, Enneagram, all of the characteristics. And then you throw on the subtype, instinct, and all of a sudden, this person just starts, there's just so much knowing. Or on the dance floor, if you go to Movement Mass or anything, you can kind of see the express. I just love watching the expressions on the dance floor. Yeah. And then also for my own expression, can that be just fully released and experienced? And yeah, I really like the word expression even more than experience, because experience can stay inside of me. Expression, how do I meet the world? How do I express my life force?
Join us in the Awaken Therapist online classroom, where my guest offers a master class in their area of expertise. This is intended for educational purposes only, and the content here should not be taken as advice or clinical supervision. Find out more at awakentherapist.com. The Awaken Therapist Level 1 certification is starting September 2025. In the 6-month training, you'll learn how to unlock the magic of psychotherapy. Join us in exploring deeper dimensions in your work with clients with less burnout. To learn more, check out our trainings at awakentherapist.com.